We made this.
Hi Tim.
Hi Paul.
Have you been buying any records this week?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. Welcome everybody to episode 3 of We Buy Records. We are going to kick off with a little bit of housekeeping.
Very sensible.
So last episode out, we took a sort of a long look at Record Store Day.
Too long.
Potentially.
But that's for another day.
But because we're so poorly researched and made a lot of assumptions, we have got some corrections. The first one, South Park.
Now, which you were very excited to buy.
Very excited to buy. I can tell you now, I won't be buying that. £180 to £220 is the range I've seen at various stores. That is ridiculous because it comes with a hardback book.
A hardback book?
Which record collectors, I'm not sure that's a good marriage.
Books.
They don't want the book.
We're not readers.
And even worse is because there are the four characters, there are two variants, mm-hmm. and each variant has a set of two of the characters for the vinyl for their colours.
So if you want all four boys,
yep.
you have to buy both. So
yep.
you've got to spend £400.
Yep. There's one last little kicker. I don't think there's any way to differentiate between which one has which.
That can't be true.
That's true. We're going to get another correction next week, but I think that's true.
Seriously, if that's true...
Chaz and Dave, Margate.
It's probably going to be about £2, isn't it, I reckon?
Yeah, we were a little bit out on the pricing. It's actually the Margate 7-inch picture disc, £22.
So you were saying last time that there are shops who will not stock certain items
Correct.
Because they're ridiculous. And I'm wondering if that's going to be a non-stock for a lot of shops.
Yeah, I've not seen anyone kicking off just yet. I haven't been looking that closely, but I might investigate some of the ones I know.
Well, because a lot of people don't know yet how much this stuff is going to be. It's only certain websites have put up their
yep.
preemptive prices, kind of saying, look, we will be carrying this. It will be this much. I think that's subject to change, but it has to be based on something, doesn't it?
Yeah, unless there's been a massive error somewhere down the line, because I've checked more than one source for these. But big up to Orbital, who we got completely wrong there. 12-inch is only going to be £7 or £8. Same as Irvin Welsh did last year with his. And I thanked him and he made a joke about not making any money last year.
But that's how it should be. You shouldn't be in music to make any money.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
It does make me wonder, in the case of Orbital, that it might be interesting to research or ask and find out. Are there cases where the artist has actually got involved and has maybe had the power to set the price? And are there cases, for example, Chaz and Dave, where they didn't? And you do wonder, is Orbital the price that these things should always be because they've had a word?
Yeah, I think that's the
If any
price...
listeners have got the ear of either of the brothers, that might be interesting to...
Yeah, no, I'd be curious to learn that as well. World of David Bowie. Now, we're told that this release is to commemorate Decca's 90th birthday.
So we poured a little bit of scorn on this release in the last
yes.
episode. Because, in my view, this Bowie record, which they're reissuing, is an early Odds and Sods Bowie. This is not the Bowie that people want. This is not the Bowie that people are looking for. It's like a nerdy Star Wars reference. and I would say, even though, if it's a 90th Decca anniversary, that's a reason.
Mm-hmm.
But Paul, is it a good reason to reissue an Odds and Sods comp that nobody wants?
No, but people will still buy it. Our friend of the show, James Dubree, posted on Twitter to tell us that he'd actually visited the crazy German shop that we mentioned in episode 1, Which Tim amusingly entitled the Joseph Fritzl Shop,
which has caught on, I noticed.
Yes, very strange. He posted
slightly poor taste, but there we are.
Yes, Jake's posted a picture of himself from, I think it was about 10 years ago, stood outside the shop, said the bloke's a complete nutter, and he could not believe that it was still running and we were talking about it on the podcast after all that time.
All I can assume is that bloke must own that building, right? He must own the premises and therefore he can do whatever he wants. Yeah. He's got no rent to pay, surely.
It must be something like that. We need to say a big thank you at this point to Andy Alcock, who did an amazing logo. Little Paul Young's face peeking out of that crate, and every time I see it, it makes me smile. And lastly, thanks to Phil for pointing out that Human Traffic is only 20 years old, not 25, so I've got
Call
a good chance.
Call yourself a film expert.
Oh, no. Shall we do the news?
Why not? News this week comes courtesy of shoes. Paul, the shoe company Vans. I'm sure you're a big fan of Vans.
I am.
You've probably skated in your life, haven't you?
No, but I do like a nice pair of Vans.
I like a pair of Vans, especially when they've got a thicker sole.
Yep.
They have announced a line of official David Bowie trainers. And meanwhile, Beyonce has signed up with Adidas, or Adidas, as a creative partner, and will be releasing some signature sneakers. One of these people's dead. I doubt they gave their permission. The other one is alive. Therefore, we have to assume she did give her permission. With this news comes a question. I guess it's a question that I'm seeking to find out what you think, really. You wear music t-shirts. You're wearing a t-shirt right now of the colossally successful Mute band The Normal. I'm not currently wearing a band t-shirt, but I have a lot of music t-shirts. Why am I okay with collaborative or demonstrative t-shirts of music and not of shoes?
That's a really good... I don't know what it is. It's just shoes. Although, I mean, the only time I've ever wanted anything like that was when Kevin Smith, I don't think it was Vans, but they did some Clerks. There was Etnies.
Okay, and you thought
I coveted them, but the weird thing about those was the interesting bits were inside, so they were printed inside.
It almost makes it worse, doesn't it? Because it means, what's the point?
I don't know.
But it kind of makes it better because it means it's just for you. Yeah. There's also Vans recently did quite a lot of Peanuts collaborative shoes and totes and digits, and actually some of those are really nice as well.
So maybe
it's music.
But who is
going
to wear...
I don't want music on my shoes.
Yeah, but who's going to wear David Bowie Vans? Who is buying that? Are hardcore David Bowie fans buying it? I don't think they are.
Young people. Yeah. I said it, the same young people, no offence to them, who would also wear a Joy Division satchel.
Mm.
And that's fine.
No issue with that.
But I don't think it's me.
Definitely not me.
I wonder if listeners, let us know, please. Music shoe collaborations.
Music shoes.
Music shoes. Yay or nay? This is the question that people are asking.
You join us on Up with the Partridge. Going from music shoes to cellophane. Now, again, this came about because someone asked a question and a few people on Twitter started responding, and I thought, I'm going to put a poll up about this. So, Tim, if you get cellophane on a new record, what do you do to get into it, and do you leave the cellophane on? What's your...
I use the denim friction method.
Right.
So, I wear jeans quite a lot of the time.
Yeah.
I don't wear blue jeans for one reason or another. I haven't done for about 8 years. I just woke up one day and I said, I'm never going to wear blue jeans again. Can't explain it. I tend to wear black or grey jeans. But the point is that the jean is the point.
Yep.
Simply hold the record directly above the jean. Place what would be the opening edge on the jean. Rub left and right, and the relatively sort of tough jean fabric makes mincemeat out of the cellophane. And the benefit of that is it creates... So what you do is all you've got to do is get a few inches split in the middle, gently pull, and the whole thing opens incredibly tightly against the opening edge.
Yep, pretty much I do the same thing, but I use my sleeve. I have used my leg on occasion, but it's the same principle. It works really well.
It's not as good as the leg.
The heat and friction, bosh. I thought...
Well, I assumed that everyone did that, you see.
I thought everyone did that as well. So, 139 people voted on this poll about cellophane.
How many said teeth?
No, I didn't give it as an option. Okay, but... 50%.
Wait, how many voted?
139 people.
Jesus fucking Christ.
We've got listeners, Tim. Yeah, listeners. Yeah. 49%, so basically half people actually take it off completely.
See, that's genuinely really surprising.
No, your face was an absolute picture then. 45% leave it on but slice it with a blade.
If you've got the skills, that's probably the best method, isn't it? Maybe. Otherwise, you can, because I've noticed my jeans wear through at the thigh.
Okay, and then only 6% of people do what we do. Anyone does that.
It's fixed.
Now, from that though, the leaving the wrapper on.
Yes.
Now, some people think it warps the record. I don't believe that. And some people believe, and I have actually seen this on older records, it can sort of become attached to the artwork and almost peels the... Have you seen this?
I've had experience of both of those things.
Oh.
It's very, very seldom in the shop that a sealed old record will come in. Very, very seldom. But the last time it did, it was from about 1972 or 3, an American LP, and it was still sealed. And because I wanted to listen to it, I decided to open it up. And to just sort of check it, really, I opened it up and it was slightly warped. Now, it might have become warped for any number of reasons, but I did think it was interesting that the first time in probably the last year that we've had a sealed record in, and I've opened it and it was warped.
Ooh, I've got a sealed record at home from about 35 years ago, a copy of American pressing of You and Me Both by Yazoo.
And it's still sealed.
Still sealed. I bought it in a flea market in Pasadena for like $5.
Wow. But you're not tempted to open it?
No, not particularly.
I also have found scores of times that old cellophane can lift print or lift. Do you know what? It doesn't lift print off the sleeve. It just can lift that top layer of laminate or just sort of printing sheen, and it can do really horrible things to a record.
So what are we saying? Are we saying
well, in spite of that, I leave it on.
Yeah, so do I. I'm working on the principle that I'll be dead before any of this is going to be an issue.
Perfect.
So Tim, this week's report is a buying report. I have no idea what you're about to tell me. I've had no kind of forewarning, so yeah, far away.
The story that I'm about to weave covers various bases. It includes, there's a pinch of vinyl stupidity in there. All I can do really is start at the beginning. We were invited to look at a record collection, no cherry picking, entire collection or nothing, at least 1,000 records, right? Always in these cases, you mustn't get excited. You might, you know, you've got to assume they're going to be tert, and then you can be pleasantly surprised if they're not. So I went in with the same attitude I always have, and I get the no cherry picking line. We've had that before. I understand that some dealers want to go in and just find the four decent items, buy them off you, and then you're left with stuff that is harder to sell. So I get that. We try and not do that. We try, unless it's absolute rubbish, we try and buy the whole thing. So this is what was swirling around in my brain. Old guy, 87 years old, not very friendly. big collection, and I went in and started looking. It was in every room of his huge house. It was in the toilet, stacks of records, in the bedroom, in the living room, in the sort of office in the hall, stacks of records. Quickly became apparent that instead of it being around 1,000 records, it's probably around 5,000 or 6,000 or 7,000 records. It was the biggest collection I've ever seen in my life up for sale, ever. You know, this was more than your average small town record shop would probably have in. It was all crap. I think I've never seen a bigger collection where, as you flick through, probably less than 1 in 500 records I would even consider wanting.
So are we talking James Last, World of Mantovani? Give us some...
We're talking James Last and not the good not the two James Last albums that anybody wants, all the other James Last albums, and even a salute to James Last.
Ooh.
Not even the real James Last.
How many copies of Tijuana Brass did he have?
A lot. Lots. I mean, it was so poor. Lots of terrible, terrible classical records, or like children's choir type records. So not good classical.
Top of the Pops?
No, not even.
Oh, blimey.
Indescribably bad records. And it, through conversing with this guy, I learned that he was hoping for, or he would have accepted, £1,500. And what it came down to, I pulled out probably about 35 records out of this 5,000-7,000 records that I would have even wanted. And there were about, weirdly, there was the first English pressing of De La Soul, 3 Feet High and Rising, and there was the first European pressing of Beck, Mellow Gold. Yeah,
who knows how things end up where they do. Yeah.
But yeah, there were about 3 records that I wanted, and about another 30 that you know, fine. Like there was like Prince Batman soundtrack, you know, fine, great. And I just thought, there is no figure that I could possibly get to that I would have to be literally insane to even make an offer on this collection, because he was absolutely adamant about the no cherry picking, and I was sort of thinking anyone would have to be a maniac, and unfortunately, I thought he's gonna die
with those records. Yeah, I mean they sound like,
because what
just,
are you gonna do,
landfill? They are landfill. I mean, you get it all the time, people are convinced that because it's vinyl's back,
yeah,
that they're worth money, and especially older people, and it's heartbreaking.
Is heartbreaking, and luckily, because he wasn't very nice, it made it less heartbreaking, but still. So from I gleaned that I think he paid about £400 all in for maybe a couple of job lots in over the last 5-10 years, something like that. So he slightly overpaid. You've never seen a bigger collection of shit. So in the entire collection, I know it's not your cup of tea, there was no Bowie, no Stones, no Who, no Led Zepp. What I found interesting was there was nothing that your typical record dealer would think is any good.
He's already rinsed and sold anything in there that was any good?
No, I think the poor sod has bought a collection or multiple collections that have been rinsed by other people.
Mm. I have once ended up buying a crap collection of dance music really cheap and finding out it was all complete toot. And then I managed to flip that on to a dealer who thought and I swapped it for a load of good stuff. He thought it was going to be gold, and I was when he left the house, I was like chuckling to myself.
The thing is, you may have spent £50 on that collection.
Oh yeah, it wasn't a lot.
Not £1,500.
No, sir.
And the other thing is, it made me think that of the value of house clearance people, where actually you pay them. Part of me did think, if I was being a bit more business minded, you would have to pay me
to take
the stuff away and go through them.
Couldn't pay me to take them away, geezer.
That's exactly what I said. No, I didn't say that. So yeah, that was interesting. And in a way, though, thank God they were crap, because it meant that I didn't have to buy them. If they'd been mediocre, that would have been torture for me. That would have been genuinely torture. If it had all been kind of £5 pop albums, I don't know what I would have done.
So and if it had all been dance music, my phone would have been going off.
It would, actually. It's just bonkers. Yeah, so I don't know how to end that story, really, but I was just...
I think it's a beautiful insight into running a shop and some of the ways you go and, you know, and the things that happen to you when you're out looking.
This is kind of a hidden side of record hunting, because most people are not in a position to be able to go and look at private collections. Most people... You know, if you're just a record digger, then you dig in shops, you dig at junk shops, charity shops, whatever. It's not often that you get to go to someone's house and look at everything they've got. But often when you do, it's a fucking horror show.
I've been fortunate. I've done it a few times, and every time it's been fantastic. Tim, I've been on Discogs, who each year release a kind of like a year-end. So some stats about what's been selling, how many items are on the database, that kind of thing. I think they're up to about 9 million now. Wow. But can you guess the top 10
mm-hmm.
best-selling records on Discogs in 2018. I've got the top 10 here. I'll give you five guesses. See if you can... And if you get five, you can carry on.
Right, well, I'm going to start obvious.
Okay.
Fleetwood Mac Rumours.
No.
Michael Jackson Thriller.
No.
Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
No. I thought you'd get all of these.
Is there any Beatles on there?
Yep.
Oh, damn it. Abbey Road.
Correct.
What? Really? I think I've had my five.
You got one more, I think.
Can you give me any genre help?
It's all beard music, bar one.
Led Zepp 4.
I don't know which one that is. It just says Led Zepp, Led Zepp. I'll run through them for you, put your misery.
Yes, please.
So number one, Pink Floyd, Wish You Were Here. Most sold record in 2018 on Discogs. Second one, Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon. Then The Beatles, Abbey Road. Number four, Michael Jackson, Bad. That won't be there next year. Number five, Queen, Night at the Opera. Number six, The Beatles, Revolver. Number seven, Smashing Pumpkins, Siamese Dream. Number eight, Led Zepp, Led Zepp. Number nine, The Beatles, The Beatles. And number 10 was Radiohead with Kid A. So, back in
Smashing Pumpkins, Siamese Dream. It's a fantastic album, but...
It might have been reissued and a lot of people bought it that way. Because a lot of people do buy new records on Discogs. You have to remember that as well. However, going back to 2010, can you guess any... And this is to be fair, I haven't actually got the sales list from them. What I've got is the Most Wanted from 9 years ago. But I will tell you that the sales of the Wanted list now are pretty similar. So back in Discogs was in its infancy, can you name any of the top 10 Most Wanted records?
Is it going to be like DJ Fart Knocker with Blunt Beats Volume 7?
No.
Oh, right. You get what I'm suggesting there, don't you?
I'm suggesting. As you probably aware, I don't own any of the bestsellers from 2018.
You shock me.
I've got a feeling you may not own any of the bestsellers or the Most Wanted from 2010.
Go on then.
Energy 52, Café Del Mar. Age of Love, Age of Love. Aeson, Trip to the Moon. JD's Plastic Dreams. Future Sound of London, Papua New Guinea. Jones and Stevenson's The First Rebirth. Rhythm is Rhythm, Strings of Life.
Classic.
Fingers Inc., Can You Feel It?
Classic.
Human Resource, Dominator.
Wow.
And LFO, LFO.
Really?
What a huge turnaround. I remember, I always used Discogs because it was the dance place.
So was LFO by LFO number one?
No, number 10. But still.
Wow.
That is a huge turnaround in the focus and the type of music and the records they're selling and the customer base.
Isn't it?
It's incredible.
Well, you're probably thinking, what the fuck has gone wrong?
Yes.
I would think.
Where have these people come from?
Wow.
I have got the top three most expensive records that they sold. I'm not going to ask you to guess, but I can ask you to guess the amount if you like. Prince, The Black Album.
Ah, okay.
Now, an original Canadian 1987 pressing of the... It was withdrawn, wasn't it?
Mm. So how almost much do you almost think that, instantly, I think.
Yeah, how much do you think that went for?
Well, knowing that it's in the top three most expensive...
It's the most expensive.
It must be ludicrous. So it must be tens of thousands of dollars.
Correct.
$40,000.
$27,500. Wow. That's a lot of money for a record.
That's a lot of money.
The second highest was actually a 7-inch... an original unreleased pressing of the Sex Pistols' "God Save the Queen."
Well, that's gone up because that is a bit of a holy grail. That because it was released on a different label and not officially released, or yeah, was it on A&M?
I think it was. Yes, because I saw the picture of it. It's less than $27,500.
I do know that. Well, but I didn't think it would be anywhere near that. £12,000.
Not far off. $15,800, which is about 12 grand, actually, wow. In pounds. And then the last one is our old friend Pink Floyd. It is Umaguma, a promo copy from Japan.
Wow. Again, I can't believe that would be worth... Wow. $6,000.
$14,000. That's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, it is crazy.
Who's buying these things? I do get. Well, we will get into Discogs at a later stage, but a lot of this crazy pricing and people asking for crazy money,
money laundering,
could be, but it also has an influence on the price of stuff, especially for rare items where there's a small, not a very fluid market, and it very drives true. Me mental.
Well, it puts the median or the average up, doesn't it? And then people suddenly think, oh, one person once bought this for 80 quid. Therefore, everyone now is going to ask 80 quid. And you'll never sell it again for that much, but forever it's been... is. So there was... I can't remember what it was, but there was a track... I think it was maybe a jungle track or a sort of early 90s dance track, which was... it had featured on a mix by someone, and you know, some legendary mix, early 90s mix, and no one ever figured out what it was. And then about 3 years ago, someone identified it, and then the next copy on Discogs, because somebody chanced their arm because of that sudden... he sold a copy for about 100 quid and now there's loads of people selling it all for loads of money, but no one's buying it because actually
it's only worth what someone's prepared to pay. And it, thankfully, Discogs does only use the last 10 sales,
so over time things can
calm down, but it only takes one prat to ruin it for everyone. Or if you're like a Premier League footballer or a Russian oligarch and you don't care, you'll buy the one at the bottom because you think it's the best. It must be.
Do you think there is some of that?
Yeah. If you've got unlimited money, you don't care. If someone's got like a mint sealed copy of something that's 30 years old and they're after 20 times its actual value, what do you care if you're a billionaire? Billionaires still collect records. They've got to get them from somewhere.
That's a really good point.
I've always thought that. I've always thought there's a tiny, tiny percentage of the record buying population that are distorting the market for everyone else.
If you're listening to this podcast and you're a billionaire... if you could get in touch about your buying habits, that would be brilliant.
That would be brilliant, yes.
Paul, it's time for some rotten reviews.
Oh, I do love these.
So this is where you get a disconnect between the general received wisdom about a record and what some prick on Amazon thinks. See if you can guess what artist or what genre this one is, Paul. This is from a real human being with a real brain on Amazon. That people actually like this crap says a lot about how unbelievably stupid the human species is. This album, in speech marks, if you want to call it that, is just a bunch of computer noises thrown together on a CD. This is describing all music that you like, I think.
Yes.
It just disgusts me that I am part of the same species. By the way, he loses points for using the word species there twice.
Twice, yeah. Very cool.
It just disgusts me that I am part of the same species that actually like this abomination. I know it could be any calculator music, couldn't it?
It could be anything at this stage.
In this case, it's a very, very hyped piece of dark electronic music that topped a lot of people's end of year lists, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago.
Okay.
It's Untrue by Burial.
Yeah, which is no a kind idea. Of dark dubstep.
Right, so the whole point of you
right, yes.
is that you're supposed to know all the electronic stuff while I know the beer stuff. That is your purpose.
Yeah, but I don't buy a lot of albums because I buy 12-inch singles.
Don't you?
DJs back in the day, we never bought albums, ever. That's why they're all really expensive now because nobody bought them. How much is an Orbital 12-inch from back in the day in the 90s?
Yeah, like 4 quid.
How much is the album?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a lot of money.
How much is a Chicane 12-inch in your shop? With a fair wind, I would say £1.
Yeah, I was going to say £2.
Okay.
But you might be right.
That album's like 80 quid.
Wow. But is anyone actually buying it?
No, but nobody bought it back then either.
Well, I've got another bit of calculator music for you, but going back in time a bit more. I'll change the name so that you can have a bit of fun guessing who it might be.
Okay.
This band are commonly thought of as the godfathers of electronic music.
Is it Kraftwerk?
So it's Kraftwerk, Paul. Damn it. And they have inspired many excellent groups like Orbital to create fantastic music. But here's a tip. So what I really like when Amazon reviewers pompously like want to, when they use phrases like "here's a tip," I'm in already. They've completely got me. But here's a tip: buy Orbital's album instead, or any modern album for that fact. This CD was a total waste of my money. What you get for your money are 12 songs so basic I could have composed them on my phone. Only about 8 of them are actual songs. That's a good one, isn't it? And none of them are interesting or musical in the slightest. I can see why people respect Kraftwerk. Oh, wait. No, I can't. That's actually what he's put. That's my two of my favourite things are when they kind of... When they spell out that they're giving you their advice, and when they do a rug pull, they're my two favourite things to watch out for. So I can see why people respect Kraftwerk. Oh wait, no, I can't.
Shall I tell you my Kraftwerk story?
Yes, please.
I had a ticket. They were playing at an event I was at, and I stayed in a tent to listen to the IQ Heart House guys DJing, and it was awesome.
Oh, Paul,
sorry.
Again, you've let me down. This is the count. This is your music.
I don't like Kraftwerk. I keep saying they need a new drum machine. I didn't write that, by the way, but I know where it's coming from.
Written by P. Field of Bexhill, it says the review is written.
There was this huge dance event, and I just found it really odd that Kraftwerk were headlining when Sven Vath was doing like a 13-hour set in a tent. And it wasn't that busy either, which is great. That would be why.
I wonder why Sven Vath wasn't busy when Kraftwerk were on.
We all like different stuff, Tim. So, Tim, we've got some listener questions. Now we have listeners.
They're naturally going to have questions,
yeah,
aren't they?
Yeah, the bastards write in and ask us stuff. No, I did put a little thing out if anyone had any questions for us. So I'll kick off here. Rich Goodall, should HMV FOP be allowed to participate in Record Store Day now that the new owner has declared them an independent? And what about Tesco and Sainsbury's wanting in on the Record Store Day action?
Tesco's and Sainsbury's, obviously not. What are you, mental?
Well, they already do it, don't they? The Sainsbury's have their like exclusive vinyls every now and again. Oh, I said vinyls then. God, I'm gonna
drop in a little klaxon sound effect.
Yes,
yeah.
Please. God.
Wow. It only took 3 episodes for one of us to say vinyls.
Vinyls, yes.
Well, yeah, they had the limited... The guy from St Etienne, I can't remember if it was Pete Wiggs or Bob Stanley.
It was Bob Stanley, I think, yeah.
Compiled a couple of compilations with fantastic... old school sort of utilitarian packaging.
Yeah,
design.
I bought one. The synth poppy type one was really good.
Well, I think that they both sold out almost instantly.
Yep.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. I don't have an objection to HMV and FOP being involved.
Really?
They have really obscure rules. Did you, this week, I nearly put this in the news, but it fits in here perfectly. Norfolk now only has one shop taking part in Record Store Day. One of them closed down. The other one, who had been, were refused participation this year because they didn't sell enough music from the distributors to qualify. They sold a lot of older music, and they said, it's not our fault. Our customer base want to buy beard music that's old, second-hand stuff. And they obviously, the labels are looking at them to shift a lot of units of new music, and they just weren't able to do that.
That should be a bigger story, I think.
And they've been hoofed out of Record Store Day.
Because what that reveals is something that a lot of people already knew, which is that it's not Record Store Day, it's Record Label Day.
Mm.
Ultimately, the record labels get to control it. The record labels, you know, the record shops have no say in what gets put out, do they? It's a label jolly. For right or wrong, it's about record labels.
I'm confused. How do you make any money? So Norfolk's a big county, one shop.
You'd like to think that at least they must absolutely knock it out of the park on Record Store Day, mustn't they?
That just seems really weird that you would cut off your nose to spite your face. But anyway, so I think that HMV FOP being able to take part would potentially, I don't know. They could qualify if you don't have an independent store that qualifies, that HMV could step in. That would make sense.
Which is probably true, actually, in most towns. I think these days, you know, independent shops selling primarily new stock are quite relatively rare, aren't they,
yeah,
these days?
It's not a huge number. Outside of big cities, once you get into smaller towns, I mean,
just the margins are so small, and it's so much work to keep. Because if you're going to do it, in case people are interested, the shop that I run with my partner, we sell a little bit of new stuff.
Yeah,
we're on the distribution lists of the big label distributors, but there isn't really much money in it, you know. And we're not in the shop to make the mega bucks. But at the same time, you have to make decisions that aren't going to negatively impact what is, at the end of the day, a business. And, you know, if you're going to do it, you need to make sure you've got all the new releases each week. It's a big financial outlay.
Yeah,
and
of course.
Massively hats off to any independent record shop that buys
absolutely.
New stock. I salute you. But yeah, it's tough. Got another listener question here, Paul. Simon Morrison asks, do you have a bought but not played yet section? And if so, how many records are in there?
Oh yeah, I have quite a substantial bought and not played yet file. We do try and play everything that comes in the house. That's why it sort of sits in a holding area. At the moment, I would say it's probably a mixture of not played but not filed either. So some of them have been played but not filed yet, but maybe 300.
Oh, that's quite a lot. Yeah, okay. But these are 12 inches, so they're quicker to get through.
They are, yeah.
Okay. I've got quite a lot. And they tend to just be randomly everywhere, I have to say. In fact, if I went through and really looked properly at how many records I have in my collection that I haven't listened to or haven't listened to all the way through, it's probably a kind of staggering amount. Because we've all been there where you've been in a shop and there's been a few things that you thought, oh, actually, I'll get all of them. Brilliant. Like, they're £2 each or whatever, and you buy a load. And so they're good records. You know they're good records. You'll listen to them eventually. Life's too short, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that's why we don't file stuff until we've got round to playing it all the way through.
Yeah, that's much better idea.
That's why the tends to happen, not when there's records all over the floor.
We tend to find at home that we get stuck on particular records and play them kind of to death. In the shop, it's much more varied, but at home, we're always buying them. In fact, one of my solutions to that is to actually, if I get something for myself, have it in the shop first, where we're actually far more likely to listen to it than at home, where we're just going to go back to Black Star by David Bowie or whatever, you know, or like a Bill Callahan record. Basically, there's probably at any one time about 5 records that we just endlessly play at home, because we're at home, it's the evening, it's kind of comfort music. So that's my tip, is listen to the records in the record shop that you run. that would be my tip for listeners to actually get through the not listen to pile.
We have got quite a lot of questions here, and we will get to them in another episode, but the last one for today is from Gavin Hogg. What other music or record podcast do we recommend? I've got two, which is Pick a Disc, which is a on the We Made This Network, so
good,
which
network.
Is fantastic. Yes, excellent. And our friends over at Amazing Tapes, which is old unstreamable tapes, talked around and commented on, and it's absolutely brilliant. So, yes.
What kind of tapes do they feature?
Like, you know where, like, self-published stuff, it has to be not available on any streaming service. So that narrows it straight away. Some of them are bloody awful, I'm not going to lie. In fact, most of them are bloody awful. But it is very funny.
So things like Barry and His Organ.
Yes.
That you see.
Lots of... Yes, absolutely that. Thank you for listening to We
Buy
Records. And we'll see you again next time.